beginning another, and underneath it, I'm always working on poetry.
Helen Dunmore, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Helen Dunmore was talking to Michael Barclay. Next week on Private Passions, Michael's guest will be the film director, Hugh Hudson. Private Passions is a classic arts production for Radio 3, and today's programme was produced by Sarah Cropper. This is BBC Radio 3. We're on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and also online. It's just after 1 o'clock. Time now for the news with David Cornett.
The Home Secretary Theresa May will make a statement tomorrow about links between the Metropolitan Police and a former News of the World journalist who was arrested and bailed in connection with phone hacking. One of her junior ministers says she has concerns about the force's relationship with a PR company run by Neil Wallis. Labour has called for Scotland Yard to make a full disclosure about the issue. The Labour leader, Ed Miliband, has called for new media ownership rules to limit the concentration of power in any single proprietor's hands. Mr Miliband said Rupert Murdoch, who still owns 3 British newspapers and 39% of BSkyB, had an unhealthy level of power. Afghanistan has begun the process of taking control of its own security. The central province of Bamyan has become the first to be handed over to Afghan police by NATO troops. The British military deployment to Afghanistan 5 years ago has been strongly criticised by a group of MPs. The Defence Select Committee says the decision to send forces into Helmand in 2006 wasn't fully thought through and too few troops were sent. An investigation has begun into reports that a British soldier who was shot dead in Afghanistan yesterday was killed by a member of the Afghan army. He was from the 9th, 12th Royal Lancers. His family has been told. UNICEF has airlifted the first consignment of aid to drought-hit southern Somalia since the Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab, which runs most of the country, eased its restrictions on foreign relief agencies. The UN agency flew a cargo of essential supplies and medicines into the town of Baidoa, northwest of Mogadishu. A volcano on the Indonesian island of Sulawesi has had its most violent eruption since it came back to life last week. Mount Lokon flung hot ash more than 2 miles into the air. Residents who'd been returning to crops and livestock on its slopes fled back to government shelters. And the weather, it'll be a cool and unsettled day with outbreaks of occasionally heavy rain affecting northwestern parts of the UK and later spreading into central parts. Elsewhere, there'll be patchy cloud and scattered showers. BBC News and Weather at 1:03.
And that was David Cornett. I'm Jill Anderson. A very good afternoon to you. We've 2 visits to the BBC Proms today. One at 4 o'clock for an organ recital given by Stephen Farr. Music by Jean Alain, Franz Liszt. And a new piece by Judith Bingham. First performance, in fact, of a piece called The Everlasting Crown. And then at 7, we've the first choral Sunday of the season. And we'll be hearing the grandest statement of British choral music, Havergal O'Brien's Gothic Symphony. And at 5:15, I should mention that Sarah Walker will be presenting an introduction to that piece at Proms Plus Choral Sundays, 5:15. The prom is at 7 this evening. But now it's time for the early music show, and here's Lucy Skeeping.
Welcome to the show. In 1492, when Christopher Columbus managed to persuade the Spanish monarchs to fund a voyage across the Atlantic Ocean, no one quite knew what he was going to find. He eventually hit land, the huge continent they dubbed the New World. But of course, there was in fact nothing new about it. Ancient civilizations had been in residence for some 4,000 years. And so began the age of the conquistadors, centuries of exploration and settlement by European powers. And often, it must be said, the cruelest of cultural suppression. First with garrisons, then with clergymen, the Spanish began their colonization of Mexico and the huge Aztec Empire with basically just one objective, money. But perhaps less well known is the spread of Christianity that accompanied this invasion, and with it, the introduction to the native population of European church music. With me to discuss this extraordinary musical exchange, and as we'll hear, it really was at times a two-way thing, I'm chatting today with Geoffrey Skidmore, director of one of the world's most successful and highly acclaimed ensembles, Ex Cathedra. whose own travels in Latin America have given him a real insight into this repertoire. Many thanks for joining me, Geoffrey.
It's a great pleasure.
Well, we're going to be hearing some really beautiful music in today's programme, some by composers who aren't all that familiar. This is by the Spanish composer Hernando Franco, who made the long voyage to the New World in the mid-1500s and eventually settled in Mexico City. I guess it must have been quite a brave thing to do in those days, to travel so far from the home comforts. What do we know about Franco?
Well, we know he must have been quite a brave person. He was, in fact, born in Extremadura, where the conquistadors came from. So he was a pretty strong stock, I would think. But he was certainly one of the pioneers, one of the first people, one of the first musicians to make that journey and establish, well, he was right at the beginning of an amazing colonial period of wonderful music.
And, of course, like all those first settlers, he was a man of the cloth, wasn't he?
Yes, he was a priest musician.
Well, let's hear Momento Mei Deus.
Thank you.
Memento Mei Deus, music for the church by Hernando Franco, one of the many Spanish musicians who settled in Mexico in the 1500s. And that was the Hilliard Ensemble. Geoffrey Skidmore, you've been exploring and performing early music from the New World for some time, and we're going to hear your ensemble Ex Cathedra in this next set. We're going to hear three short pieces. They're all non-liturgical, which is interesting, really, isn't it? Because these first European settlers were very much there for sort of missionary purposes.
Absolutely, but they instantly, it seems to me, apart from building hundreds of churches and mission stations, they learnt the language, and a lot of these early composers and priests became fluent in Nahuatl, and the early pieces were actually written in this new language. So all three of the pieces you'll hear now are in Nahuatl, the Aztec language.
Are people still speaking this language, or has there been some kind of revival?
They do speak this language. Juan Manuel Lara Cárdenas, who was one of the most distinguished Mexican musicologists, is of Aztec descent, and he prepared these transcriptions for me and helped me with the pronunciation of Nahuatl.
Wonderful. So what are we going to hear? Three different composers.
This is quite interesting that the second piece is by Hernando Franco again, and he's an early composer writing in indigenous language. And I was told that his pupil, Francisco Hernandez, which is his name reversed and made Spanish, it was a tribute to his teacher to turn the name around, which is rather lovely. I hope it's true. And Gaspar Fernandez is another Spanish composer who very quickly learnt the new language.
And that's a particularly beautiful lullaby we're going to hear, the last in the set.
Yeah, they're all quite beautiful. I mean, Santa Maria is, for me, one of the most exquisite pieces of the whole repertoire that I've discovered. But they are beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
Sleep, little child, for the angels have rocked your cradle. A delicate lullaby there by Gaspar Fernandez. A setting of words in the old Aztec language. Trifri, it's got a very beautiful feel, the language. Can you say something to us?
It is very beautiful. Shikochi, shikochi, konetzintle. Just has a beautiful, for me, on a matapaic ring to it. Shikochi, sort of kuchi kuchi, trying to get a baby to sleep. And when I was in Mexico, I heard several performances, and they were all very fast. And so I thought we'd try a more lullaby approach.
Mm. And before that, by the way, we heard a little hymn to the Virgin Mary by Hernando Franco again. And to begin the set, we heard Santa Maria E by Francisco Hernandez, all performed there by the Singers of Ex Cathedra, directed by Geoffrey Skidmore, who, as you've heard, is my guest today. Of course, in the early days of the colonisation, all the composers that we're hearing from those first decades, of course, are people who had come from Spain. One of them is Juan Gutiérrez de Padilla. We know quite a lot about him because he's probably one of the most important, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a very influential composer. He was born in Malaga and moved early in his life to Mexico, worked for a while in Mexico Cathedral, and then went to Puebla, which is a very beautiful city southeast, I suppose, of Mexico City. And that's where I spent most of my time, looking around the area and looking in the cathedral archive, where Padilla's manuscripts are still to this day in beautiful, large, sort of a metre tall part books. Absolutely gorgeous, and just sitting on shelves in a dusty cellar underneath the cathedral.
We're going to hear a piece by Padilla. This is Versa Est in Luctum. Is the text for a specific occasion?
Yeah, it's an antiphon for funeral services, and it's set by many composers. One of the most famous settings is by Alonso Lobo, which was performed at the funeral of Philip II. I was absolutely amazed when, in the archive in Puebla Cathedral in Mexico, in these giant part books, I came across Lobo's setting of Vers Est in Luctum. And so Padilla obviously knew it, performed it, and then made his own setting, which we're about to hear.
Thank you.
Versa est in luctum by Padilla, a Spanish-born composer who became director of Puebla Cathedral near Mexico. And the voices we heard there were the New York-based ensemble Chanticleer. Jeffrey, it seems quite difficult music for anyone to sing if they haven't had a musical education. I'm trying to picture these sort of the indigenous population learning music. I mean, how skilled did they become and how quickly could they pick it all up?
We know that the Aztec civilization regarded music very highly. And if we're to believe Robert Stevenson's writings about this, they took to instrumental playing and the singing, the whole European music process, very quickly. So I think we can assume that they did develop the necessary skills to do this music beautifully, yes, in the sort of way we've just heard. I mean, Chanticleer and Hilliard Ensemble are amazingly precise, beautifully focused, tuned ensembles. And I don't think there's any reason why we can't assume that the Aztecs could manage the same.
Well, the next performers we're going to hear are the 16 with a piece by Padilla. Was Padilla very popular at the time, and was he a very prolific composer?
He was a prolific composer, and he seems to have been very popular. His music crops up everywhere. And he had lots of pupils that followed on from him.
Well, we're going to hear a Marian antiphon, Ave Regina Celorum. Church music by the Spanish composer Padilla, performed by the 16. So music like that would have been heard, say, in Puebla Cathedral, where Padilla was in charge of the choir. Let's try and picture the cathedral in these early days.
It's a very large cathedral, and there's a very large choir area where the priests and the musicians were behind the congregation in the nave. It's a very wide area. There are two rows of pews where the musicians faced each other. When I was there, there was an enormous lectern of Fassis Dol, where they presumably put these giant part books to sing from, and all gathered round, instrumentalists and singers, and sang to each other across this very wide space. So the double choir music was a big feature of the Poblano style. And the Miss Egaflos Campi, we're going to hear, is a very typical and very special piece. It uses a word in all the movements and makes it a structural and a teaching feature. So in the credo, throughout, one of the choirs constantly repeats the word credo, credo. And the other lovely thing, it is in a European style, but there are irresistible moments where there's some South American syncopation, South American flair takes over. And I think it's captured very well in this recording. And you'll hear some wonderful guitar and harp, and the pluckers really begin to enjoy it. You can imagine that happening at that time when they really relish playing those sort of instruments.
Thank you.
the Credo from Misa Ego Flos Campi, our final work by the Spanish composer Padilla, the musical director at Puebla Cathedral in New Mexico, the first half of the 17th century. And the performers there were the Harp Consort, directed by Andrew Lawrence King. Our next composer, Capillas, he was really one of the most prolific composers out there, I think. What sort of life did he have? He was a priest, I suppose.
Yeah, he worked with Padilla at Puebla, Francisco López Capillas, and he was born in Mexico, so he's a Creole composer.
So he's almost the next generation.
The next generation, indeed. And his music is incredibly refined. It's sort of, it's like the sort of Palestrina of the repertoire. Still in double choir, still using that Poblano use of one word, laudate, in the next piece we're going to hear. You'll hear laudate, laudate, laudate repeated between the two choirs, emphasising that word of praise. And I also tried to orchestrate in using the instruments we knew they had in the Puebla Cathedral. So one choir has strings, another choir has cornets and sackbuts, and there's a big team of two harps, one theorbo guitar, Bachon playing the bass line and organ. So it's quite a rich colour.
Thank you.
Laudate Dominum, a setting by Capias, performed there by Ex Cathedra, directed by Geoffrey Skidmore, who's my guest today. That is a wonderful sound. It's so sort of life-affirming, isn't it?
It is, very rich.
In your travels around South America, you were obviously sort of searching for the remnants of the Spanish musicians of the 17th and 18th centuries. What's the general attitude to all that now? I mean, after all, although some wonderful music emerged from the period, is there a sense of loss for this ancient culture that was forced to convert to Christianity?
It's a very interesting question, a very interesting area. It was a land conquered by Europeans. My feeling was, which was quite interesting, when I met musicians in Mexico, was that they were beginning, they'd moved on to the next phase, and when they're beginning to understand the importance of the colonial period in terms of their heritage, and that they were beginning to see this was all everybody's heritage, and it was a wonderful heritage, and they could enjoy that heritage. And even poets like Octavio Paz wrote about this being probably the most important cultural element in their history. So it was giving musicians a confidence. I think this is why a lot of musicologists were beginning to re-examine their own heritage, and it no longer came from North America.
We're going to hear the harp consort again in this next piece. It's by a man called Zespedes, who I think had links with Padilla, didn't he?
Yeah, he was Padilla's successor, in fact, at Puebla Cathedral. And this is a very interesting piece. It's Villancico, a guaracha, a dance. And I spoke to a musician in the archive in Puebla Cathedral talking about this piece, and it's a very well-known, popular piece. And I said, what do you use for percussion? And he said, just wait a minute. He went to his bag and he got out some pods and he gave them to me as a present.
And here they are.
Here they are.
They're like two enormous dried runner beans, huge, or sort of all boomerangs, something like that.
They're quite a prize. I really treasure them and sort of look after them and hope they will last.
Thank you. Convidando esta la noche by Juan García de Céspedes. Well, I suppose most of the later composers that we're beginning to hear now, Jeffrey, in the programme, were born in Mexico. Was there still quite a bit of musical sort of traffic, though, from Spain during the 18th century?
Yeah, I think people were continuing to come over and were probably overjoyed and surprised at just how rich a musical world they found there.
Another Creole composer of this later generation, born in Mexico City, was Sumaya. And we're going to hear a piece by him now with an orchestra as well. Quite something, actually. What was the instrumental tradition like, I mean, in the terms of sort of orchestral instruments?
Manuel de Sumaya, he was maestro de capilla at Mexico Cathedral. And then for the last part of his life, he moved to Oaxaca, which is a very beautiful city, even further away from Mexico City than Puebla. He seemed to be very happy there, had a lovely group of singers, lovely group of instrumentalists. And this piece is typically joyful and bright and uses now a classical orchestra, really, a string band with a trumpet obbligato. There's a trio of soloists and a four-part choir. Extraordinary harmonies and really lovely words. Rejoice, mortals, for dawn is coming. Listen, for the birds are singing.
Albricias mortales, rejoice, mortals.
Thank you.
skillful nightingale, a sonorous goldfinch, roses, men, fish, birds, all praise this sunrise. Lovely words there. Ex cathedra with Albricias Mortales by the Mexican-born 18th century composer Sumaya. Did sound an awful lot of fun to perform that, Geoffrey. It must have been such a breath of fresh air for the choir. They liked it,
enjoyed
it.
Yeah, we love singing this one. And the repetition of the word oigan, oigan, listen, is a lot of fun.
Well, I think we should end today with sort of a bit of a production number, a really large-scale piece. This one's from a composer working in Mexico well into the 18th century. His name is Ignacio Jerusalem. He, in fact, was born in Italy. By this time, people were coming from all over Europe, wasn't it? It wasn't just Spain.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably quite a good place to be and a good place to make music.
Wonderful thought. Well, thank you so much, Geoffrey Skidmore, for joining us today.
It's a great pleasure.
And good luck with all
your
continuing work on the Baroque music of Mexico, because I know you're kind of starting it all up again soon, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back into this.
We're going to end with music by Jerusalem, Quem Terra Pontus Sidera, and it's performed here by Chanticleer.
Chanticleer and the Chanticleer Symphonia, conducted by Joseph Jennings, in Jerusalem's hymn Quem Terra Pontus Sidera. And that ends today's programme, which was presented by Lucy Skeeping, who was talking to Geoffrey Skidmore. And it was first broadcast in May last year. You can find details of the music played on the Early Music Show website. Just follow the links to the programme pages, where you'll also find details of the newly launched Early Music Show podcast.
It's proms time, and that means the Lebrecht interview, where top performers tell it as it really is. First up, Semyon Bychkov, the high-octane conductor who insists he's not a control freak.
How precise do you think were the great, great creators in what they did? Unbelievably precise. They knew exactly what they wanted. If we are to serve them, we can't afford any less precision, we can't afford any less devotion, we can't afford any less preparation and curiosity. If it was so difficult for Beethoven to compose a symphony, why should it be easy for us to perform it?
On the Lebrecht interview, after tomorrow's prom, on BBC Radio 3.
Well, we have two proms today, and at 4 o'clock we're off for the first of them to the Royal Albert Hall. It's an organ recital given by Stephen Farr. We'll be hearing music by Jean Alain, Liszt, Bach, and a new piece by Judith Bingham called The Everlasting Crown. And just for today, Choral Evensong is at 6 o'clock this evening. But now we join Jamie McDougall for a concert given by the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra in Glasgow last month.
Hello and welcome to the City Hall's Glasgow, the home of the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra. As part of the orchestra's Listen Here weekend, when the doors of the City Halls are thrown open to the public to see and hear the orchestra perform three very different programmes, all showing the range and diversity of what the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra does, today they present an all-British affair with their associate guest conductor, Andrew Manzi. Ralph Vaughan Williams takes centre stage with two works. We're about to start off with his Fantasia on a theme by Thomas Tallis. And later on, kicking off what will be an exciting exploration over the next 3 years of all of Vaughan Williams' symphonies by the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra and Andrew Manzi, we have his second, the London Symphony, and I'll be able to chat to Andrew about that a bit later on. And between these two popular works by one of Britain's most celebrated composers, we'll hear Glasgow-born composer Ian Hamilton's Concerto for Jazz Trumpet. And joining the orchestra will be the Norwegian trumpeter Tina Tinga Helset. But before we convert the City Halls into a smoky swing joint, we'll turn the clocks back to an altogether different time. It can be easy to forget that underpinning Vaughan Williams, the composer, was Vaughan Williams, the scholar. At the time of writing his Fantasia on a theme by Thomas Tallis in 1910, by then in his late 30s, Vaughan Williams had been not only the musical editor for the Purcell Society, editing the Welcome Odes, but also the editor of the English Hymnal, in which he used a number of tunes by the 16th century composer Thomas Tallis. The Phrygian theme from which Vaughan Williams constructed a series of tightly integrated variations comes from the third of 9 psalm tunes, Why Fumeth in Fight, that Tallis composed for Archbishop Parker's Psalter of 1567. Expressively scored for double string orchestra and string quartet, Vaughan Williams had assimilated a newfound harmonic vocabulary of Debussy and Ravel, and combining that with his knowledge of Tudor antiphonal choral music, created a musical language and expression that is both old and new. The antiphonal effect is heightened by the positioning of the players here in the City Halls. We have the quartet and the larger ensemble we would expect them to be. And where the trumpets and trombones would usually be sat, we have the smaller ensemble of 9 players. And this creates at times another worldly sound. To conduct the strings of the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra in Ralph Vaughan Williams' Fantasia on a theme by Thomas Tallis, please welcome Andrew Manzi.